Dozens of new houses are being handed over this week to those made homeless in the devastating earthquake that hit the L'Aquila area of Italy this spring, killing around 300 people and leaving at least 50,000 homeless. But as the six-month anniversary of the disaster approaches, let's shine the spotlight on the plight of those thousands of people from the area who, in a few deadly seconds, had their lives turned upside down as they found themselves without a roof over their heads and with only the clothes they wore on their backs. How easy has it been for them to try to rebuild their shattered lives? And what kind of future is likely for the once thriving historical city of L'Aquila? Marion Cadman is British-born, but has lived in L'Aquila for over 30 years, and together with her English husband, runs a language school in the city. She says the mood in L'Aquila is still generally somewhat sombre, 6 months on from the disaster.
It's very mixed. In some cases, I would say depression is setting in. There's a feeling that people are beginning now to understand how uncertain the future is. Once the initial survival necessity has sort of gone by, I would say that there's no single answer. But then I'm not living like Joe in a camp or in a small community. People are very dispersed. To find people that you once knew is very complicated because maybe you only had their home phone numbers. And if you didn't have a mobile phone number, you can't get hold of them. So this morning I bumped into somebody in the supermarket and we stood in floods of tears for 10 minutes because we hadn't been able to find each other in the last 6 months.
Now, I know that for you, you not only lost your home, but you also lost your business. How tough has this been and how hopeful are you that you'll be able to make a go of it again, start up again, as it were, from scratch?
This is probably the toughest part for us. Our business had grown up over the years. It was an English language school and it was very much part of the community. We had the grandchildren of our first students. There's no real help for businesses. You're on your own. You have to find premises. The rents are high. Commercial contracts are for 6 years. So to find the courage to undertake a commercial contract for 6 years with a one-year penalty clause if you don't make a go of it is really very hard. I saw the mayor the other day. He was driving past in a car and he wound down his window and he said cheerfully, "Marion, where are you going to open the school again? Everything has to come back exactly as it was before." And I thought, well, there are no areas to help businesses. You just have to find your own solution.
Do people believe that the city of L'Aquila can fully recover from this blow and go back to being what it was before, particularly as far as the university is concerned? I know there's a lot of concern about that.
The city can't go back to what it was before. One of the great things about L'Aquila was that I came here 35 years ago when it was really like a village and everyone went to bed at 9 o'clock, at least all the women. It had become a buzzing place full of students, full of nightlife, full of energy. And the historic center was the heart of the city. In Italy, many cities, especially in the north, the historic center shuts down at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock when the shops shut. And our fear is that the center of L'Aquila will become a sort of Disneyland with beautifully restored medieval buildings. And the new centres that are springing up like mushrooms all around the city will take over. The city is finding its own new patterns, but they won't be the same as they were. And as far as students are concerned, it's very hard to find accommodation for the students from outside L'Aquila. We have to see. I think it's too early to say.
In addition to the city of L'Aquila, dozens of surrounding towns and villages were badly damaged by the quake on April the 6th. One of the worst hit places was the tiny village of Onna, which was almost entirely levelled by the quake, killing over 1 in 10 of its population. Briton Jo Griffiths-Jones lived in Onna with her Italian husband, and both are orchestral musicians. They have just been assigned one of the temporary wooden houses built on the outskirts of Onna, but before that lived in the local tent city for the homeless in a caravan lent by friends. She told me how they felt to once again be living in a house.
I think it's reasonably good considering the magnitude of the disaster, as we all know, thousands upon thousands without homes. And In 6 months, many people are now starting to move into homes. I think the atmosphere is reasonably good. The morale is reasonably good for the moment.
Now, you've just moved into a new house, one of the lucky ones. Tell me, how did you feel about moving into this new house? What were your emotions?
It was a bit bittersweet. Very relieved to get into a house before the winter starts. L'Aquila is it's high up in the mountains. It's a cold region. Already the mornings are very damp and cold. So it was a great relief to get into a house. They're very warm. They're very well made. Have a bathroom. Bittersweet in the sense of finally, I think it is hitting home. Part of your brain keeps grasping onto the fact that perhaps you might move back into your house sometime, somewhere, in some way. And of course, going into this temporary accommodation, it's hit home that we will not ever move back into our home.
You lived for nearly 6 months in a caravan. How tough was that?
Actually, probably I was one of the lucky ones. I think living in the tent with the heat of the summer must have been appalling. In the caravan, we had privacy. It was a largish caravan with a veranda. So in that sense, compared to other people, we were reasonably lucky. Yes, you miss the commodities of having a bathroom, of walking 200 meters to have a shower or whatever, eating in the mess tent all the time. But again, we were much more fortunate than many other people, fellow villagers.
And how difficult was it for these people living in the tent cities? Can you give me any feedback from people you knew who were in that situation?
I think it depended very much on the different camps. In Ona, we were very lucky because we all knew each other, 280 people, and we all knew each other very well. There were no problems of theft, of violence, whereas in other larger camps where there are thousands of people, where people under house arrest were put because they had nowhere else to put them, I believe there were a lot of difficulties. Theft again, violence and whatever. But in Ona, we didn't experience any of that, thank goodness.
Okay, let's go back to that day on April the 6th when the city was hit by that very powerful earthquake. Can you describe what happened when the earthquake struck? What were your feelings at that time? And how did you manage to escape from your home?
When the earthquake struck, as most people were, we were in bed asleep, being 3:30 in the morning. I sat bolt upright screaming, and my first very quick flash thought was, this is the one. We'd had so many smaller tremors over the last 3 months, 3 to 4 months, that we'd got quite blasé about them. But there was no doubt that this was the biggie. My husband woke up a fraction of a second after me, threw himself on top of me, because at that point we could feel that we have a vaulted brick ceiling, and it was starting to crumble in. We couldn't move. It was so powerful, the shock was so powerful, that the combination of a washing machine, a drill, the noise was deafening. We couldn't actually get off the bed, get out in any way. When finally the tremor began to subside, pitch black, of course, clouds billowing dust, we managed to get hold of tracksuits to pull them on and crawled on all fours along we sleep on the second floor, towards the staircase. Something made me stop, and I put my hand down and realized the stairway had gone. We went through then into the front room, not realizing that half of the floor had gone down, actually, in that front room, to try and call for help. But all we saw were that the houses had gone down in front of us. And at that point, I began to realize that this was very serious indeed. With sheets, we managed to get down to the first floor and then scramble down the rubble to the ground floor, where we found one petrified dog, but alive. Couldn't get out of the front door because it was completely out of sync. Couldn't open it physically. Scrambled through to the back and got out through into our back garden. All that took us about half an hour. Right through from our back garden is a high wall, and we got over the high wall, and there's a small public garden on the other side. And there we gathered together with our neighbours, the people who have managed to get out, and people organised themselves also into small teams trying to call for people who hadn't managed to get out and see if we could help in any way.
And you weren't presumably able to take anything with you except the clothes on your back?
No, absolutely not. At that point, the tremors continued during that half hour that we were getting out of the house. The tremors were continuing. My husband had realized that the top two floors had completely come out away from the outside wall. So at any moment, that house could have gone down. At that point, you just thought of getting out. We're both being musicians. I did say to him at one point when we got down to the ground floor, our instruments. And at that point, another tremor struck. And quite rightly, he said, we just get out. We just get out now.
Like so many other people of the area, Marion, too, had a dramatic story to tell about how she, her husband and their teenage daughter managed to escape from their house in central L'Aquila when the earthquake struck.
Well, like Joe, there was a feeling of, OK, this is it. My daughter was in the house and my husband. My daughter was sleeping on the floor above us. She had, in fact, got herself under her bed, which was a bed made of wood, solid wood, by a friend of ours, which was partly the result of training and partly because the quake threw her out of bed and she was able to slip under the bed, which was very lucky because the floor above came crashing down onto her bed and my husband had to dig her out. I stayed downstairs. He said that everything was all right, that she was alive, that he was getting her out, so I waited. And while I was waiting, the tremors continued. And then we had the problem of not knowing whether the staircase was still standing. And so we sat under a table for about 20 minutes thinking what to do, because we know that you should not move in the first minute, should wait for things to fall that are going to fall. And that was good because, in fact, our corridor, the ceiling, did fall. So by waiting those 20 minutes, we probably were safer.
But how does a dramatic experience like that change one? Let's listen to Joe again.
Yes, it has changed me. It's in so many ways and so many facets. One is you program a life, you decide what you're going to do, you decide. We were almost deciding, even though we've got another 15 years before going into retirement, we were beginning to think about what we would do, what we would work towards. And a tremor like that, it sweeps, takes the carpet from under your feet and you're back to square one. And planning, you plan more cautiously now.
Have you been back to see your house or what remains of it, the village? I mean, what are your feelings when you look around at all this destruction?
Well, we never moved away. The camp, the honour camp, is actually right next door to the old village, to the destroyed village. So every day I see my house looking rather unstable. At the beginning, we went in with the fire brigade to try and see if we could get anything out of the house. We managed to get some things out of the ground floor, but the other floors are too dangerous. It's a stab in your heart every time you go there. It reminds me of a wounded animal. It still won't die. It still won't go down. But it's so badly destroyed that, of course, it will be bulldozed, I believe, at the end of this month.
In terms of the solidarity that was shown to the homeless in the weeks immediately after the April 6th quake, what was your reaction to this?
The solidarity was overwhelming. Overwhelming from friends here in Italy, from friends in the UK. My sister organised a fund to help me get through those first weeks when we weren't working. Friends turned up from everything from toothpaste, loo paper to underpants, because we literally got out of the house with just a tracksuit on. From unknown people as well, unknown faces, people who sent letters, who sent some sort of help. It was absolutely overwhelming, and also from the official bodies such as the fire brigade and the Civil Protection Agency and the Red Cross.
So people there don't really feel forgotten now that the memory of it is fading, at least for the rest of the world.
Well, rebuilding is of course the next process. We're all just being put into temporary accommodation at the moment, and rebuilding, well, that's all to be seen how that will be developed, if it all will be rebuilt. We're talking about an enormous historical centre of L'Aquila and various outlying villages. It will be a long, long time to see really how it all develops and how we get permanently rehoused.
I was speaking to Joe Griffiths-Jones and Marion Cadman, who both lost their homes in last April's earthquake in central Italy.